deliberately starved. The vast majority of those detainees have been taken from Gaza, specifically from its northern part. Those are the same people who refused the Israeli eviction orders and stayed rooted in their neighborhoods despite the relentless Israeli aggression. Today was their lifetime moment to reunite with their families and loved ones, a moment they never imagined to be real, as the sunbeams could not sneak through their tiny, dirty cells.
The situation was extremely difficult. One day seemed like 100 million years. The food and drinks available were insufficient to suit the needs of a 2-year-old baby. We were constantly beaten and abused. We can't express anything from the horrible reality we lived in.
The detention experience is harsh and unbearable due to the detainers' torture and the tiny and cramped cells. We spent over 4 months in the jails. We were tortured, subjected to medical mistreatment, and we were starved. Their treatment of us was horrific. As I was freed, I pray that all the prisoners will be released from imprisonment. I hope we can meet again and that they can see their family and loved ones.
With happiness and joy shining in everyone's face here, Palestinian detainees who have been taken unfairly and brutally from their hometowns in Gaza have finally reunited with their loved ones and their families after tasting every sort of torture inside Israeli jails. And their freedom is just the sign of victory they have been always yearning for. Abu Bakr Abid, Khan Yunis.
More Palestinian casualties are reported in the Gaza Strip as the Israeli regime continues to violate the ceasefire agreement with Hamas. At least 2 Palestinian civilians were injured after an Israeli drone strike targeted a bulldozer clearing rubble in central Gaza. 12 Palestinians were also wounded by unexploded ordnance across the war-ravaged territory. The bodies of 25 civilians who were reported missing during the war were recovered from under the rubble. The new fatalities increased the death toll from the Israeli genocide to nearly 48,300, with nearly 111,700 others injured. According to Palestinian sources, Israel has committed 270 ceasefire violations since the truce took effect in January, killing over 100 citizens and injuring dozens. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier with the latest updates on the situation in the besieged Palestinian territory. Let's take a listen.
Right now, as we speak, the Israeli fighter drones are still flying at low altitudes and levels here in Gaza. They are still buzzing over the heads of the Palestinian people in Gaza. And this means clearly that the Israeli occupation forces are still ongoing and persistent with their violations and the brutalities on the ground here. Needless to mention that over the past couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces targeted a bulldozer that was paving the way for the Palestinian returnees near Al-Mughraqa area, because, as you know, the Israeli forces have destroyed the infrastructure on the roads, which complicates the situation on the ground, particularly when it comes to the movement of the Palestinian people, inside Gaza City or between Gaza City and the central area of Gaza. The Israeli forces are still insisting on keeping those violations against the Palestinian people. And even when it comes to Rafah City, which is still the focal point of those Israeli violations, the Israeli tanks continue to shoot at the Palestinian people, attempting to return to their residential areas near Philadelphia Corridor in the southern part of the city. Attacks and those violations are still constant. Since the very beginning of the implementation of the ceasefire agreement on the ground, the Israeli forces have never stopped their violations against the Palestinian people at all levels, basically when it comes to the humanitarian protocol.
Israeli forces have attacked the homes of recently freed Palestinian abductees in a number of towns and cities across the occupied West Bank. According to local media, Israeli soldiers broke into the house of 43-year-old Musa Diab Shataye, who was released as part of the 6th batch of abductees, forcing his relatives to leave. The father of another abductee from Al-Quds was also summoned by Israeli forces for further interrogation. Earlier, Israeli military raided the homes of other released abductees in Bethlehem, threatening their families against organizing a reception for them. The brutal attacks come after, in recent weeks, Israeli forces conducted raids on the homes of Palestinian abductees scheduled to be released as part of the prisoner exchange agreement with Hamas. Our West Bank correspondent Nika Hammer joined us earlier to bring us up to speed on the latest Israeli atrocities across the occupied Palestinian territory. Let's take a listen.
Despite all of the obstacles and despite all of the restrictions that the IOF has put on receiving those Palestinian free prisoners and of course on how to receive them and how to celebrate, and the restrictions and the threats that the IOF has made even before they were freed, this was not enough for the IOF forces, as they have raided most of the homes of the freed prisoners and expelled many relatives and family members and community members who were waiting to receive the freed prisoners. For example, a raid has been made on the house of the Palestinian Nael Abed, who was freed towards occupied Al-Quds. He was the only a Palestinian who was freed into occupied Al-Quds today in this patch, and announced that there will be no reception. They are banning anyone, even family members, from being inside the house. Anyone who is more than five persons or more than five people inside the house is forbidden.
Tens of thousands of demonstrators have walked through central London to the American embassy to condemn U.S. President Donald Trump's stated plan for Gaza. The march comes around a month after a violent police crackdown on a similar demonstration in the British capital. Saipul Reza has more.
There may be a ceasefire in Gaza, but mass public mobilization demanding justice for Palestinians, like this one in London, is unrelenting.
A ceasefire is just step one. We want a lift off the siege on Gaza. We want the freedom of every Palestinian from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, for the right to return for all Palestinians.
The ceasefire is not the end of the occupation and the subjugation of the Palestinian people. The colonization continues. It started in 1947-48, and we have to end that.
These protests will continue until Palestinians have the right to return to their homeland.
Marching towards the American embassy, the demonstrators direct their anger at the British government for what they call a shamefully subdued reaction to the genocide in Gaza and to Trump's comments.
Among other things, the protesters here are also highlighting continued UK complicity in Israel's actions through its supply of weapons, as well as its military and diplomatic support for the genocidal regime.
But their main target, the U.S. President Donald Trump's stated plan to ethnically cleanse Gaza of its Palestinian inhabitants, a condemnation of that plan delivered on the doorstep of the U.S. Embassy.
It's a morally and politically bankrupt idea, and I think the size of this march, which is a really, really big one, is a measure of how strongly people feel that they want to turn up and protest it.
This is one of the dozens of demonstrations held in Britain since the start of Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians. It comes despite the violent arrest of 77 demonstrators and organizers by police around a month ago, a move which the demonstrators here say was aimed at stifling expressions of solidarity for Palestinians.
They're obviously trying to instill fear in people to try and stop them. I wasn't at that protest, but I was there for Armistice Day, for example, which they tried to ban completely. And the response was the complete opposite. So I'm hoping this time, actually, given what happened last time, that more and more people turn up.
And they did, in their tens of thousands, a clear sign that the Palestine Solidarity Movement is here to stay. Saïd Bourza, London.
That's why French protesters have taken to the streets of Paris in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. They slammed what they called France's inaction against Israeli genocide. Peter Hume has talked with some of them about their demands.
The fact of forcibly evacuating population is a crime against humanity. And Macron cannot just make nice statement about the fact that it is not possible to deport 2 million people from Gaza, but he must start having sanctions against Israel.
I'm here to fight against Zionism and to fight the the value of Palestinians' lives and to make their voice be heard all around the world.
We want a cessation of any economical activity and political support towards the Israeli government in its genocidary campaign. And we want a recognition of a state of Palestine.
First of all, I would like French government to stop funding this genocide by sending arms to Israel, by having company like Starbucks and Coca-Cola and McDonald's, for example. Stop having a government that's fully Zionist. That'll help for sure. And just recognize Palestine as a state as it should be.
Pakistan became the focal point for global solidarity with Palestine as it hosted a two-day international Palestine conference. Delegates from over 15 countries, including political leaders, journalists, and human rights activists, gathered in Islamabad to discuss the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi reports from the Pakistani capital.
The two-day international conference dubbed Echo of Palestine kicked off in the Pakistani capital Islamabad on Saturday. The event brought together political leaders, members of parliament, prominent journalists from different parts of the world, along with delegates from over 15 countries from Asia, Europe, and Africa. The discussions underscored the global solidarity with the Palestinian cause and the necessity of unified diplomatic efforts to address the crisis. While condemning U.S. President Donald Trump's recent proposal to forcibly displace the people of Gaza, the participants unanimously vowed to protect the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the Palestinian territory.
It's a non-serious statement, and nobody in the world is taking it seriously. It's shameful for a U.S. president to talk in violation of the international law. He should be upholding the integrity of the international law.
The international community and the Muslim and all the world states should stand up with the Palestinians for this issue because it is an occupied soil. This is not the soil of the United States or another country.
Participants engaged in the in-depth discussions on year-long violence in Gaza, Israel's continued military aggression, and the urgent need for international intervention to rebuild Gaza after months of destruction by the regime.
Palestinians have their own plans of how they want to reconstruct Gaza. It's just that we need to give that encouragement, and we need to prepare that platform, maybe at the United Nations, maybe at OIC, but Malaysia playing that role. I think we are now together working with Japan for a reconstruction plan for Gaza.
The conference also paid tribute to the martyred journalists of Gaza along with the martyrs of the resistance who kept the cause of Palestinian liberation alive through their sacrifices.
Participants at the International Palestine Conference highlighted the dire humanitarian conditions in Gaza, urging world leaders, including those in Muslim-majority nations, to take concrete steps toward rebuilding Gaza and making serious diplomatic efforts to counter Israeli aggression. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Iran has confirmed that it is indirectly in contact with the new administration in Syria. Iranian Foreign Minister's Special Envoy for Syria, Mohammad Reza Shehbani, said that Tehran has received messages from the new government in Damascus. He said Tehran has a forward-looking approach vis-à-vis developments in Syria and seeks restoration of ties with Damascus. Shehbani also noted that Iran is closely and patiently monitoring the status quo in Syria and will take its appropriate decisions in due time. He underlined the need for all Syrian political parties to have a role in shaping Syria's future. The top Iranian diplomat's announcement came after remarks by Syria's acting foreign minister, Assad Hassan al-Shibani, about the exchange of positive messages between the two Muslim states. With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. with you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
EuroMed Human Rights Monitor has stated that the humanitarian situation has not improved despite the Gaza ceasefire and that about 8,500 trucks have entered the Gaza Strip, but only about 35% of them have made it to the northern part of the Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, along the coastline of Deir al-Balah, central Gaza, where tents are pitched atop muddy ground, Ebtihal Abu Ghali, her husband Osama, and their four children are living in dire conditions. Ebtihal, 39, said, every night we shiver from the cold. We try to cover the children with whatever blankets we have, but nothing is enough. At the beginning of February, winter storms struck the area, uprooting some tents and flooding others. Ebtihal said, we were asleep when the wind suddenly howled. I felt the tent lifting off the ground. My husband rushed to hold it down, but the winds were stronger. She said that heavy rain flooded the tent, collapsing the walls and leaving the entire tent, including all their blankets, soaked. The family sought shelter from the downpour that night with displaced neighbors. Since the ceasefire agreement was announced on January 15, 2025, the Abu Ghali family has been waiting for the agreement's humanitarian provisions to be enacted, including the shipment of 60,000 mobile homes and 200,000 tents into Gaza. The Abu Ghali family was forcibly displaced to Deir al-Balah from the Yebna camp east of Rafah in May 2024. When the ceasefire took effect, Ebtihal and Osama went to the site of their home, which the Zionist regime had destroyed in an airstrike, hoping to place their tent next to the ruins until reconstruction began. However, the destruction was so overwhelming that they couldn't even set up their tent, and they had to return to Deir al-Balah, where they remain. Salam Ma'ruf, head of Gaza's government media office, told the Electronic Intifada in a phone interview that the occupation refuses to fulfill its obligations under the humanitarian protocol of the ceasefire agreement. Specifically, only 20,000 tents of 200,000 have entered Gaza, he said. As for mobile homes, not a single one has entered Gaza since the ceasefire agreement was reached. EuroMed Human Rights Monitor has stated that the humanitarian situation has not improved despite the Gaza ceasefire and that About 8,500 trucks have entered the Gaza Strip, but only about 35% of them have made it to the northern part of the strip. Maruf said that the occupation's failure to meet its commitments by allowing in essential supplies exacerbates the suffering of displaced citizens, particularly in the winter. Tens of thousands of families, he said, have been forced to sleep in the open air during the recent storms. He said, "Every night is a new nightmare." Next to the Abu Ghali family tent, the Shaheen family is also enduring this hard winter with hopes to return home. They were forced to evacuate from their home in the Al-Karama neighborhood in Gaza City in October 2023 during the Israeli ground invasion. They have been living in this camp of makeshift tents along the coast of Deir al-Balah ever since. Mahmoud Shaheen, 42, said, "We thought we would return to our home soon, but to this day, we have no idea when reconstruction will begin." Mahmoud, his wife, and their five children dreamed of setting up our tent over the ruins of our home, but when we arrived, we found the place unlivable. Their home had been completely destroyed by Israeli regime attacks. Rubble fills the streets, and no livable infrastructure remains, Mahmoud said. Everything was buried under rubble, and no efforts have been made to clear the debris. Now, in Deir al-Balah, rainwater seeps into their tent and strong winds rumble through the tent's walls. Firewood and blankets only provide temporary relief. He said, "Every night is a new nightmare. We fear our tent will be blown away, just like what happened to the Abu Ghali family more than once." Osama Abu Ghali got to work the morning after the storms, rebuilding the family's tent in Deir al-Balah once again.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, easy to forgive. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab, on RB English Radio. So, title is Easy to Forgive. So, this refers to an incident in the life of the famous martyr Ibrahim Hadi, who was martyred during the Holy Defense. And it's a particular incident, and I'm sure there would have been many incidents like this in the life of this famous martyr. And indeed, any of the martyrs, any of our pure-hearted people who are really doing what they can to live the best life as a Muslim and really not cause harm to other people and to support the oppressed and to, in a sense, have compassion and empathy for people. So this goes back to, obviously, this is when Ibrahim Hadi was not on the front. This is when the boys in the alleyways of Tehran would often play soccer in the streets. So the story goes that one evening, Ibrahim Hadi was walking along with a friend, and one of the kids in an alley kicked a football really hard, and it sort of hit Ibrahim Hadi straight in the face. Now, it hit him so hard that he actually had to sit down for a moment. His face was quite red, obviously, from the impact. And his friend was really angry, and the boys were sort of felt probably very guilty and were starting to run off. But what Abraham Hardy did, so he's sitting there and he just puts his hand into the bag he had and he gets out some walnuts and he's sort of asking the boys, here, come and have some walnuts. And his friend is sort of quite amazed at this. The boys sort of had sort of run off out of fear. And so what Abraham Hardy does, he puts the bag of walnuts down next to the soccer ball because he's assumed, yeah, they'll come back, they'll get the ball and they'll get the nuts. And so Abraham Hardy explains, look, they didn't do it on purpose. So, and obviously this is quite amazing. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, that you walk down a street, walk down an alleyway, kids playing soccer, and you know, maybe you've been hit by a soccer ball. I think it's happened to me, and I'm always slightly wary walking down the alleyways. When I see the kids playing soccer, I always sort of go to the side. I don't really like the hard impact of the soccer ball myself. Welcome back. This is A to Z on RB English Radio, and obviously I'm talking, the title is Easy to Forgive, and I've just mentioned how a famous martyr, Abraham Hardy, even though he was hit really hard in the face, not on purpose, this was an accident, by a soccer ball, by kids playing in the street, there was no anger, no upset. In fact, he just had to collect himself for a few minutes and then wanted the boys to feel better. He sort of was offering them nuts even though they'd run off. But you know, just imagine that. You can imagine that if something happens to us that sort of takes us by surprise and hurts us most likely, maybe causes a fair bit of hurt, and whether you've been hit by a soccer ball when kids are playing in the street or maybe actually in the park, our immediate, it's like an instinctual reaction. It comes, our self-preservation, self-survival almost, is some sort of maybe utterance of annoyance or maybe even anger. There was nothing there. So even if Abraham Hardy had even had a sandcorn of anger inside him, obviously even that was controlled, and he only had sort of empathy for the kids and forgave them because he knew they hadn't done it on purpose. But this, there's also another very interesting little thing in there. Obviously, there's the distinguishing between, well, no, if they'd done it on purpose, maybe it would have been different. Maybe he would have said something to them. But this is also a sense of, you know, righteousness and justice. When people do things by accident, you know, we react differently to when someone has purposely tried to harm someone. But there's something else there, and that's advised to us, for example, if we do ever feel just a bit of annoyance or anger coming up, we're advised, for example, to like go and make wuzu. Or, for example, we're advised if we're standing to sit down, if we're sitting to stand up. And it's very interesting that Abraham Hardy sat down in that incident. So that obviously just struck me. So these are little tips and tricks we can use if we feel any little annoyance welling up, if we're ever in an unusual situation where we feel like that, inshallah. So inshallah, you've gained a few extra points or insights from today, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z on RB English Radio, and farewell for today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
the limelight.
The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has warned that the forcible expulsion of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank is escalating at an alarming pace, with the Zionist regime displacing 40,000 people in recent weeks. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, on January 21st, Israel launched a larger-scale assault on the northern occupied West Bank, just days after the Gaza ceasefire began. The military started in Jenin and its surrounding areas, killing 25 Palestinians, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. The offensive expanded to Tul Karm on January 27th, where five Palestinians were killed. On February 2nd, the Zionist regime launched another operation in Tamun and the Far'a camp in Tubas, withdrawing from Tamun after a week, but continuing its offensive in Far'a. Israeli regime forces are particularly targeting refugee camps, including those in Jenin, Tul Karm, and Tubas, putting an already vulnerable population at risk. Recently, UNRWA said several refugee camps have been nearly emptied of their residents, adding that this is the longest campaign in the territory since 2000 to 2005 Second Intifada. UNRWA said Jenin camp stands empty today, evoking memories of the Second Intifada. This scene stands to be repeated in other camps. According to the UN agency, more than 60% of the displacement of Palestinians recorded in the West Bank last year was due to Israeli regime military operations. It added, repeated and destructive operations have rendered the northern refugee camps uninhabitable, trapping residents in cyclical displacement. Jamal Jom'e, head of the Stop Wall campaign, an organization that fights against apartheid, told Middle East Eye that the Israeli regime offensive is clearly aiming to prepare the infrastructure for the annexation of land in the West Bank. Annexation of occupied territory is illegal under international law. The Israeli regime government professed to term it as applying sovereignty, though that makes little difference legally. Legality hasn't stopped Israel from annexation before, however. Since the 1967 Middle East War, the Zionist regime has annexed occupied East al-Quds and the Syrian Golan Heights in moves never recognized by the international community. Jom'e indicated that such an acceleration in land seizures is the Zionist regime's attempt at gaining U.S. President Donald Trump's approval for its claiming sovereignty over the territory in spite of international law and Palestinian rights. Palestinian armed resistance has been growing in the northern West Bank in recent years. Jom'e said that Israel's targeting of refugee camps is done because they are believed to be the source of resistance. Jom'e recalled, such a military operation reminds of the 2002 mass invasion of the West Bank. He believes that Israel's current operation is the second stage of a plan begun when it built the apartheid wall, as he characterizes the separation barrier built between Israeli communities and Palestinians in the West Bank. They finished building the system. Now they want to implement the annexation of the West Bank and cement the apartheid system they are creating. Besides eliminating armed resistance, Jome said that Israel's focus on camps is also aimed at getting rid of the refugee problem, which he suggested is similar to events in Gaza. Around 750,000 Palestinians were forced from their homes by Zionist militias during the 1948 Nakba that created the fabricated regime of Israel. Today, their descendants make up the 7 million Palestinian refugees worldwide. About a million of those who live in the West Bank, around a quarter of which live in 19 refugee camps. During Trump's 2017 to 2021 term as president, the Zionist regime seemed primed to announce it was annexing Area C, the part of the West Bank fully controlled by the Zionist regime military. Though this has not come to fruition, the U.S. president has recently called for the Palestinians of Gaza to be permanently expelled and hinted that the West Bank should become part of Israel. Jome said, "They want to get rid of the refugee issue as it's the evidence of their big massive crime of genocide that they did in 1948, noting Israel's recent banning of UNRWA and larger-scale destruction of camps. In late January, an Israeli ban on UNRWA operating in Israel and occupied Palestine came into effect. The agency warned that the ban has made it impossible to raise concerns about civilian suffering or the urgent need for the delivery of humanitarian assistance, saying that this puts at grave risk the lives of Palestine refugees and the UNRWA staff that serve them. The UN agency provides aid, health and education services to millions in occupied Palestine, as well as the millions of Palestinians living in refugee camps in the neighboring countries of Syria, Lebanon and Jordan. Jome said Israel's far-right government, which is supported by a big portion of the Israeli society, believes now is the perfect time to target the refugee issue as it has the support of the United States regime. He added that Israel's war on Gaza, which has killed at least 48,000 people, proved the Israelis would have immunity and support from the United States regime and Europe to carry out their wishes. But he noted, "What they are doing is very dangerous, not just for Palestinians, but also for the Israeli people. Israel will not get rid of the Palestinians. They will instead create a huge problem within the region and the Arab world. If things continue this way, they will create a huge refugee problem," Jome said, adding that Europe will be negatively affected. He added, "We see now how this threatens the whole security of the world. So people must stand up against this. Palestinians will not remain silent, and the region will not remain stable by the continued massacre of the Palestinian people and the continued genocide. We will not be finished."
Welcome to this episode of Israel Watch. The Hebrew media discussed the scenes of mass crowds in Gaza as a political message showing the strength of the relationship between the Palestinians and resistance factions. It also expressed concerns that Tel Aviv might pay a heavy price for the ceasefire, especially after the release of captives. Additionally, there were concerns about the political and military challenges after the failure to eliminate Hamas and attempts to remove it from power in the Gaza Strip, while the arrest of two Israeli soldiers on charges of espionage with Iran raised concerns about Israeli national security. These topics are discussed with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, president of the International Association of Political Experts. Hello and welcome to this episode, Dr. Mohsen.
Thank you, good morning.
The scenes of large crowds of Gazans around the Nazarene corridor topped the discussions in the Hebrew media, where analysts interpreted it as an important political message that highlights the strength of the relationship between the Palestinian people and the resistance factions. Do you think Hamas' popularity has soared, Dr. Mohsen?
Hamas and the Palestinians in Gaza are one. And whatever the Israelis try to do in order to find separation or try to find this division between the resistance and its people, these people are the resistance, and the resistance are these people. So the Palestinians are one in terms of fighting against the Israelis, because they are trying to damage the Palestinian issue, the Palestinian question, and the Palestinian life and culture and existence. That's why I guess the Palestinians are keen to see this unity between them, and that's how they are demonstrating in thousands and probably hundreds of thousands in order to return to their homeland, to the north, in spite of all the restrictions and the damages and all the catastrophes that occurred in northern Gaza. So what we see now, we see that the flag and the voice of the resistance is higher than whatever
exactly
the Israelis try to dominate.
And now
try
we can
to
see
say,
images of what you're highlighting.
Pessimism on their faces. Yes, that's how people got march for their freedom and for their liberation and for their resistance. The resistance still is the mind and the reason of the Palestinians. And I guess the Israelis, actually they lost. They lost everything in spite of their, as I said, massacres, killing, this catastrophe in Gaza Strip. But still the culture of these people is not to let Palestine. Palestine is their destiny, is their essence, is their being. And these people, the Israelis, I mean, they cannot implant any fear or scare these people, because these people are the owners, are the Palestine in themselves,
yes,
because they represent this spirit of Palestine.
But Dr. Mohsen, there is a fact that we cannot deny. The Israelis still insist that they will not allow Gaza, they will not allow Hamas to rule in Gaza. How can they achieve this?
Well, actually, the Israelis, they know they have negotiated, they have their interlocutors, the Hamas. If there were no Hamas in these negotiations, their hostages or their detainees would not be back.
Yes.
To the Israelis. They know that they have to go through Hamas in order to find a kind of stability or peace, or at least a truce. In this truce, they have to tell the Qataris and the Egyptians in order to talk to Hamas, and Hamas will reply. And many times Netanyahu even said that we did not have the response of Hamas. We still have to wait for the Israelis and the Hamas in order to say yes for this truce or for this deal. The deal without Hamas can't work.
However,
and Gaza without Hamas cannot work.
Okay. However,
they bring
Dr.
to Gaza,
Mohsen,
they will fail.
However, many concerns were expressed by the Hebrew media, stating that Tel Aviv would pay a heavy price for the ceasefire agreement in Gaza, which included the release of a large number of Palestinian captives from occupation prisons. They were worried that this event could encourage more future kidnappings of soldiers and settlers. Dr. Mohsen, do you agree with this assessment?
Well, I guess the situation in Israel between the government and even the soldiers, the army, and the society is not a healthy relationship. And because they don't trust this government, the Israelis went in demonstrations in Tel Aviv and in Al-Quds in order to pressure this government to make the deal, well, months ago, even 1 year ago. While on the other hand, the Palestinians, they have this healthy society, because in spite of all these, as I said, problems created by the Israeli aggression.
But many Israelis are against the deal, Dr. Wilson.
Against the deal, but still, most of them, because Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, of course, they would be against the deal, because they want to kill the Israelis and to kill the Palestinians and to remove
We're talking about people, not politicians, from Gaza.
Yes?
We're talking about people and not only politicians.
Yeah, we are talking about people. The Israelis are having this split between at least two, the right and the Nazis and the Zionist Jews. But I guess, on the other hand, on the Palestinian side, you find that in spite of all what has happened, I guess the Hamas and the Gazans, their relationship is very healthy, very strong, and they try to do to damage and find this split they could not. While on the Israeli side, because they are not the owner of the land, because
yes,
they are aggressors, and they are having this sickness of Judaism or Zionism, I guess the Palestinians having this rest, this good relationship between the resistance and the people, and because they have brought people into the resistance and they have created a new spirit or a new soul or new culture,
mm-hmm,
unless we fight against the Israelis, unless we resist, then the Gazans, especially they have heard Ben-Gvir and Jared Kushner and also even Netanyahu, they want to remove the people from Gaza. And in order to be in Gaza and to preserve their existence there, they have to fight. So they have found division inside their society, I mean the Zionist society,
yes,
while the Palestinian society live probably proportionally in a very good term with each other.
This comes while the political and military challenges facing the Israeli occupation entity have multiplied after the ceasefire agreement in Gaza, especially regarding the failure to eliminate Hamas and remove it from the power in the Strip. Dr. Mohsen, do you believe that a new kind of Palestinian authority leadership can be imposed in Gaza, also with the collaboration here, let's say it, with the United States, some Arab countries such as the UAE and Israel, taking into consideration what the American Secretary of State highlighted, that Hamas cannot be back to power in Gaza?
I think they are trying to think of the impossible thing, that Hamas is there in its power, in its popularity, in its representation of the issue of Palestine, not only Gaza. So Hamas even told the Arabs that if you want to bring a civilian government or management or direct control the situation in Gaza, we have no objection. But I guess, would they be able to do so, mm-hmm, without Hamas? Would the Palestinians expect to cooperate with these newcomers from Cairo or from Doha or from even the Palestinian Authority? They did not do a good thing for the Palestinians in order to cooperate with them to make the new administration of Gaza.
Okay.
Hamas, whatever they have done from the 7th of October, they have taught and learned that without this cooperation between the people and Hamas, things cannot be done, because they have experienced the Hamas's government, and they have really succeeded in bringing harmony to the people there and bringing the good situation to Gazans. But the Israelis and the Palestinian Authority and whatever from the Arabs they tried to do a new thing in Gaza.
But what's the purpose of the visit of a Middle East envoy, Trump's Middle East envoy?
Well, we have heard you and everybody from the media that Trump want to talk to King Abdullah and to President
and
Sisi.
And that failed, to Jordan and to Egypt, well, to take the Palestinians.
They refused here,
Dr.
Well, this is a conspiracy. We heard from the media they refused or they objected, but actually they will surrender to the Trump's appeasement of Smotrich and Benjamin Netanyahu, and will try to execute that, will try to make that reality.
But I guess
the issue is with the Palestinians. You see these marching people through the Netzarim and from south to north. That will prevent this conspiracy to pass and to be implemented. The Palestinians are the owners of the, and they are the owner of their blood.
They're the indigenous people.
Indigenous, and their blood and their soul and their culture and their religion and their doctrine and whatever they have against this conspiracy. Whatever they do.
Yes.
Even if one Palestinian, one family in Gaza state will resist all these conspiracies against the
Israelis. When they are asked, they said exactly as you are analyzing,
Absolutely. They will have, and Hamas and Hezbollah, the resistance in the region, they have told people that not to be transferred or dispersed or diaspora here and there in the world.
Okay.
So we are on the right track from the cultural and psychological and social issue. What we have to do is that to find Arabs mm-hmm. who could cooperate with the resistance
moving on,
to do something good for Palestine.
Moving on to the second topic, criticism of the policies of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continues, as former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert sharply criticized the current administration leader, holding him responsible for the violent operations in the West Bank and pointing to the legal consequences that could follow Tel Aviv at the International Criminal Court due to war crimes. Does a Zionist settler terrorism pose a real threat on Israel, especially that the former Prime Minister here, Ehud Olmert, is also warning of this?
Well, he is the one who knows that Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and Netanyahu are one of the dangerous persons on even the society, because since they commit these crimes against the Palestinians, and that will shift into crimes against themselves. So many times they have threatened each other in order to kill each other between the right wings of the Likud and the Israel Baytuna and all these factions,
yes,
and this Haridim, about the mustering of the Haridim to the army, and Ehud Olmert and Ehud Barak and Benny Gantz, and even all of them, they have warned from this movement in the West Bank in order to curb their tendency to kill like beasts, like they have killed in Gaza, and they are killing in Gaza and in the West Bank. I guess their destination is the terrorist and the, of course, the International Criminal Court,
yes,
asked to arrest, asked the governments to arrest Netanyahu,
yes,
and Gallant and others.
What is a very important topic that we need to highlight is that Trump obviously is expected to even be more tolerant with the file of settler terrorism, especially after he uplifted the sanctions.
Yes, yes.
And as we all know, on some individuals from the ultra-right settler movement. How do you expect this to actually evolve in the coming days, given all these facts?
Well, there are many warnings from some of the American experts, like John Mersheimer and others, even Alain Papé, who is originally a Jew, warning the the American administrations not to go under the Netanyahu's grip. He wants to make very dangerous place in the
yes.
In the Near East and the Middle East. Well, I guess Trump will try to stop the fires here and there. That's why
okay.
I guess he proposed such a dangerous idea about transferring the Palestinians from Gaza mm-hmm. and probably next day from
okay.
West Bank.
Okay.
But I guess will these conspiracies, will these plots go away and work and people will
okay.
will
yes.
treat them positively?
We're running out of time,
no.
Doctor. Thank you very much, Dr. Mohsen Saleh. President of the Association of Political Experts, thank you for joining us.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the contents and commentaries of chapter Qasas, the 28th chapter of the Holy Quran. Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 29th verse of chapter Qasas. Let's listen to the verse and we'll be back with our discussion regarding this one.
Bismillah.